You turn with me for a message to Matthew chapter 1. Start reading at verse 18. And we're going to go through chapter 2 a bit. As I thought about a message for this morning, I know that next Sunday is closer to Christmas than this Sunday. But there's always this, once you're past it, it seems like you're already thinking the new year. You're already thinking the next thing, right? So we're still thinking ahead, and probably this week you're thinking about, well, I want to wrap work up whatever day it is and why, so you can have a couple of days off or whatever it is. You think about, we are thinking about Christmas this week. And so thinking about the birth of Christ, even though it's called Christmas by the calendar, and I think you understand what I mean. So I pondered as I read this story a few times recently, just, Lord, is there something that would stand out? You know, I've preached the Christmas message different times, and it's a story we all know, right? Is there something that would stand out? And one of the things that stood out to me was the response of people to the birth of Christ. And so that's the title, if you want it. And as we read, think about there are individuals and groups of people that responded differently to the news of Jesus being born. Let's start reading verse 18. Now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise. When as his mother Mary was espoused to Joseph, before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man and not willing to make her a public example, was minded to put her away privately. But while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take unto thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. And she shall bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins. Now all this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, Behold, a virgin shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us. Then Joseph, being raised from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord had bidden him, and took unto him his wife, and knew her not till she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born, King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and are come to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privately called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search diligently for the young child. And when ye have found him, bring me word again, that I may come and worship him also. When they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold, and frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, Arise, and take the young child and his mother, and flee into Egypt. And be thou there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt. And was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, Out of Egypt have I called my son. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem, and in all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. We'll stop there. One of the things that I couldn't help but notice that in the groups of people that surround the birth of Jesus that it's talking about here in Matthew is that some had the birth of Jesus forced into their laps that they had to do something with. Others didn't have to do anything with it. Okay, so bringing us to the first one, which is Mary. Did Mary have an option? Did Mary have an option? Some of this you just see, God in his foreknowledge knew that Mary would say yes. I think we have to reckon that Mary was a human and could have said no, right? I'm sure she could have. But she said in Luke chapter 1, verse 38, "Behold, the handmaid of the Lord, I am your servant. Be it unto me according to thy word." And we'll talk about this more later, but probably there was a variety of feelings that went with the birth of Christ with her. Probably that is a mild way to say it. Probably on one hand, there was tremendous excitement. On another hand, we are kidding ourselves if we think there was not a cross to bear in this situation. The second person I think about of Joseph. And I think of Joseph because I'm a man, so I think about Joseph and what he had to face, okay? Joseph had an option, okay? I really believe Joseph could have said, "I'm not going to be part of this. It's not going to be what I'm going to do for life." But he had to face the coming of Christ, the birth of Christ, like no other person did. There was no one else that faced it like he did. He knew that taking Mary as a pregnant woman would immediately put him in the class that he was guilty. He had to have thought through that. He had to know that is what people would think. But maybe his love for Mary was so strong that that didn't matter. I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us those details. But the lesson I think we want to learn from Joseph is when he looked at all the facts surrounding the birth of Christ, and we think of what the angel told him to do, it says he got up and he did what the angel of the Lord told him to do. I also find it interesting that it is commonly believed that Joseph died at a young age. The last record we have of Joseph was whenever Jesus was at Jerusalem, 12 years old, and they went back and said, and Mary said, "Thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing." And that is, and he went back to Jerusalem and was subject to them. Back to Nazareth, I'm sorry, and was subject to them. That is the last reference we have of Joseph. The other indicator we have is at the cross, when Jesus was being crucified, is that he looked at John and said, "Behold thy mother." He looked at his mother and said, "Behold thy son." And I had to wonder, is that because Jesus saw to her needs, helped see to her needs to that point? See, the Bible don't tell us, does it? I had to wonder why at his death he made sure his mother was taken care of. Maybe he made sure she was being taken care of before that, but it would be a very good indicator that Joseph was no longer around. We have another group of people, and that is the wise men. And I think you know this, but I'll bring it up because I know there was younger ones coming along. There are storybooks out there that say that there were three wise men. Three wise men. The Bible don't say that there were three wise men. It just says that they gave three gifts. Gold and frankincense and myrrh. It's men, so it's plural. There's more than one. But it could have been a whole group. We don't really know. Okay? So we don't know if it was two or three men that came or a whole group. I think it might have been more than that, but I think it was probably a nice group. But I could be wrong. It might have only been two or three. It might have been three and they gave one gift each. I don't know. I don't know that's important. Who were these men? And you can turn with me back to Genesis 25. Now, As far as I know, we don't know, okay? But we would have to admit that these men were not dumb concerning things to come, what was happening, okay? They were wise men. And is it possible that they were part of the lineage of Abraham? Genesis 25, verse 6, "And unto the sons of the concubines which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while he lived eastward into the east country." Now, where did the wise men come from? They came from the east. I don't know if it's a connection, but it easily could be. It could be a connection of who they were. So that's one little thought. Maybe it could be. I also have Isaiah 2, verse 64 written down. I'm not going to go there, but there was men of the east that were very wealthy. And maybe it was those men. It was very possible. But what I'd like to think about in the wise men was that they didn't have to do anything with the birth of Jesus. It was not thrown into their laps like it was Joseph and Mary. It was sheer choice to make a long trip to Jerusalem first, is where they came, and to try to find this baby. They were from a far country. And this was not Jesus doing miracles, and the word of the miracles got out to them. That's not what it was. Where is he that is born, King of the Jews? They came to see a baby. And I know some of this is opinion, and I have to be careful with that. But I don't think they waited real long to start their journey. How old was Jesus? We don't know. The word young child is used here. And if you look that up, it's anywhere. It can mean an infant, or it can mean a half-grown boy or girl. That's what the definition is. So all applies, right? So we don't know how old he was. We do know that Herod had diligently inquired when the star appeared. And we know that Herod took the life of all the children from 2 years old and down. Now, my guess is Herod covered his tracks. He probably went overboard to make sure he covered his tracks. It's also, and I didn't really think about this till this time studying it, that Joseph and Mary were from Nazareth, okay? That's their home. When you read Luke 2, they come up out of Nazareth into Bethlehem. And so it was at Bethlehem that the wise men met Jesus, found him. So either they moved or they just stayed a while, because Bethlehem was not their home, was not their hometown. And even when they come back from Egypt, they went home to Nazareth. Just a few thoughts. And so I just say that to say I don't think the wise men, and to me it's a spiritual illustration for us of how the wise men did not just sit around, twiddle their thumbs, should we do it, should we not. It's not a matter of getting into the vehicle and going. This was a journey. It took a while. They came from fairly far away. And so, till they planned, made plans, started the trip, it could have taken a while for them to do that. And just saying all this to say that these wise men were diligent, and we're going to look at them more. But that was another group of people that surrounded the birth of Jesus. There is another person, that is King Herod. An example of tyranny, I guess you would call it. He saw the birth of Jesus as an affront and a threat. Because why? He was king. And we could go to the book of Acts, where there was a problem because people were saying there is another king, Jesus. The thought of another king coming was something that Herod could not accept. To call someone else king in his mind was not an option, because they came asking, "Where is he that is born King of the Jews?" Wrong wording for King Herod. King Herod asked questions, acting like he was interested in Jesus to find out where he was. "Come tell me that I may worship him also." That was not his plans, was it? And we know the story. We also notice that Herod actually did not live very long after that account. He was gone. he was dead by the time Jesus was even a young boy. And so Herod, in his scheming, his trying to get rid of Jesus, did not last. There is another group of people surrounding the birth of Jesus that probably challenges me more than all of them. Let's look at what verse 3 says. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. All Jerusalem was another crowd. So, the way I understand, all Jerusalem heard about the wise men coming. They heard about the question. The chief priests and scribes were called in before Herod to answer, where was Jesus going to be born? And they answered correctly, in Bethlehem of Judea. And that was the correct answer. The question I have, okay, so we know the shepherds came and visited Jesus. We know the wise men came from far away and visited Jesus. Bethlehem was only about 6 miles from Jerusalem. And if you were walking in those days, I don't know, it depends who you are, how long it would take you to walk 6 miles. Just say 2-3 hours. Now, there's men here, young men here, that drive that far to see a girlfriend. Now, do you think is it worth it? Or, I mean, that's long. You got to come on the way home. I mean, 2-3 hours? I can tell by the looks on their faces they think it's worth it, right? But there was a whole group of people that knew about the birth of Jesus that, as far as we know, did nothing about it. Did nothing about it. So what can we learn from these groups of people? Number one, we're going to work our way backwards, okay? The response of indifference will lead to deception and missing the most important things in life. The response of indifference will lead to deception and missing the most important things in life. And we know that there were people in Jerusalem that later recognized Jesus as the Messiah for who he was and accepted Jesus Christ. But for the most part, the people in Jerusalem did not. They did not go make that walk to find out where he was. They didn't try to search into it that we know of. And it is a response of indifference. And this challenges me a lot because I think I see some of these concepts in my life. To some, there is a response of indifference because, you know, life has so much to offer. When you're young, life has so much to offer. Life has, you can move forward in life. There's so much to look forward to. Why not go forward with life? And to think about spiritual things is not as exciting as other things. Jesus gets pushed to the back burner. And there is a pressure today to, when I think of this response of indifference, is to include everyone and not offend anyone. And I'm going to illustrate this by an article I read recently, and I'm just going to talk about the article. And it was talking about the differences between Generation X and the Millennial Generation. Now, Generation X is about from 1946, I think, to 1980. Millennial was from that point to somewhere in the 2000s. So that's the difference. So some of us find ourselves right smack in between. Okay, and that's where I'm at. And I can see both maybe in myself. But it had a number of things. But some of the ones I'm pointing them out for a reason, okay? I'm not trying to be funny, maybe a little bit. But Generation X will always pick up a phone and call somebody. That's the way they were raised. That's the way they do it, okay? And the millennial generation would never call anyone. They always text just because they would never want to inconvenience someone by a phone call. Generation X will be the ones where their phone rings out loud in a meeting. The millennial generation that would never happen because it's been on vibrate since 2009, but the article said. Generation X will stand in a line at the grocery store, present their coupon, $2 coupon, and when they say it is invalid, they will stand there and argue their point that this is a valid coupon that they must use. Millennial generation will just say, oh, okay, that's fine, and then go out in their car and cry because they really needed that $2 coupon to work. But they definitely wouldn't want to offend anyone. Well, there's 10 people in line, so you get the point. Generation X didn't care. They want this coupon to work. The millennial generation says, oh, I would never want to make a scene. Let's just leave. And then the scene happens in the car, I guess. Now, okay, there was more to that article. But there is a push in our world to not stand for anything. Okay? There is a push to not stand for anything. Let's just not offend anyone. I won't stand for anything. Let's just not make any big deal. And maybe you can just think about how that could play out in your life, whether you're Generation X or the millennial generation. And so there's possible that the response of indifference comes from a pressure that we don't really think about, okay? The pressure of maybe just to always please and to never stand up, as they talked about the X generation standing up. But as I think about the response of indifference, I think about it at, I think about my age group, and I'm going to refer to age groups here a little bit, and I don't mean to be offensive by that, but we do need to understand that each age group faces some different challenges, and it's best we understand that. Jesus said in Matthew 22, I'm going to go back there and read a few of those verses. Matthew chapter 22, and this is the account here. It says, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son and sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again he sent forth other servants, saying, tell them which were bidden, behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen, my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready, come unto the marriage. But they made light of it, and went their ways, the one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants and treated them spitefully and slew them. We'll stop there. I don't think the men will care that I share this, because it's not really a private matter, but on the one accountability group I'm in, we sat around the other night and we talked about, I think the one brother had devotional on the verse where, beware lest the cares of this life, deceitfulness of riches, choke the word and becometh unfruitful, something like that. Or chokes out spiritual life. And all of us in that meeting were 40 and older, okay? That's the age group. And, you know, everybody talked about how that is affecting their life. And I know that sometimes maybe young people get tired of those kind of conversations. But if you're here this morning and you're 35 and older, you're 35 and 60, I'm going to say you're in what I call the age of responsibility and the age of servanthood. It doesn't mean that if you're a young person, you're not taking responsibility. It doesn't mean you're not being a good, you're not doing your job right. I'm just saying, when you're in that age group, you're in a time whenever there are so many times responsibility falls on that age group. Now, I'm just making an illustration, okay? We read it last Friday, Saturday. We were at a family gathering. Now, would anyone want to guess which age group stayed to clean up? I'm not trying to be dumb. I'm trying to make it a point. Somebody tell me. Okay. You're right in the middle, so I don't know if you'll make it there or not. But I'm not trying. When we were young married, we went to the big family gatherings. You know what? After suppers, we're out of here. They can clean up, right? We did it too. But there is a point in life where it feels like everywhere you go, everything you're involved in, everything you do, somewhere responsibility comes back to our age group. And I'm not trying to toot our horn, But what I am trying to say, okay, boys here, girls, do you ever go to talk to dad and you start talking and you realize he's not listening? Has anyone ever had that happen? Oh, okay. Now, I want you to understand this, you need to understand your parents a little bit, okay? That happens because they're at that age of responsibility. There's a lot going on in the head some days. Because everywhere you turn, there's things that need to happen. There's customers you need to take care of. And you're just going down the line, okay? But, now back to our age group. Let's face it, though. That is also the thing that can trap us. That is also the thing that can get us into trouble. That's why Jesus said, be careful that the cares of this life, the care of this life, it's just normal responsibilities, doesn't take away from your spiritual life. And you know, somehow I think that back in Jerusalem, that there were well-meaning men and women that said, you know, we ought to go check, maybe we should go to Bethlehem someday and see what happened. See if we can, is this true what the wise men said? But he just never got around to doing it. You know, we were in the way here Friday night, and I felt just a little bit guilty about this. And we've seen police lights ahead of us. Of course, everybody's slowing down. I didn't even see any banged up vehicles going past. But my wife said, I think I saw someone with a dress on. But you know what? We're running late. And our people need to be in the chorus. I need to have devotions. Well, you know, it didn't look like anyone was hurt. There was police there. Let's just keep on going, right? I don't know if it's a response of indifference or not. And, you know, some of these responses of indifference can come very subtly. And I think there are times in life that, you know, there are things that maybe I was really passionate about as a younger person that I'm not as much anymore. I don't think that means I'm losing out spiritually. I just think it's what age does to you. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong. The question here still remains. Regardless of your age, what are you doing with Jesus? What are you doing with Jesus? Number two is lessons from the wise men. Lessons from the wise men. They took time for the important things of life. And I know I'm saying things that are not necessarily in here, but the fact that they were wise men, they brought gifts, it tells me that they were men of had things going, men of responsibility. I mean, I think that's probably the way it was. They didn't accumulate those gifts by sitting around twiddling their thumbs. I think they probably had other things that could have occupied their time. I think that would probably be an accurate statement. They could have done other things besides make the trip to Jerusalem to search for a baby king. Or maybe because they were wise men, they learned to delegate better than some of us do, maybe. And you know, as I think about this today, you know, there are things in life that matter, and there are things in life that are not as important. There are times in life that we must say yes. And there are times in life that somewhere we need to say no. I don't know where that line is for you, and I don't always even know where it is at for myself. But I see wise men here that made a right choice. They'd made time for important things in life. They took time to worship. It says they came to see that babe and they worshiped him. They took time for worship. And I think the older we get, the more responsibilities we have, the more service we are involved in, the more important this is. If you're here and you have a lot of responsibility, you have a lot of things going, it's more important than ever that you spend time to worship. Spend time with the one who died for your salvation. Spend time with the one who has a plan for your life. Spend time with the one who will give you Holy Spirit direction and guidance. Take time to look up. And I need this reminder. You probably heard me say this before, but I can get so focused sometimes I forget to just look at the stars. My wife sometimes reminds me, hon, just stop and look up at the stars. Do you know that's what these men did? I don't know that their wives reminded them. I think they did it by choice. Probably because they were used to looking into the heavens to determine weather and other things. You know, even my mom and dad, I can remember talking more about what the sky means for weather to come than I don't hear it anymore. You know why? If you want to know what the weather's going to do next week, what do you do? What do I do? You don't look up, do you? Maybe you say it's a mute point. I don't know. There is something that it does for you when you look up into the heavens. Wow. You can hardly look it up into the heavens for long at all, and you have to think of God. Now, you might know the stars better than I do, but would you know if a new star appeared? Now, maybe it was distinctly different. But it doesn't say. The Bible don't say. To me, those wise men were looking up. And you know, I recently, I think I said a little bit last Sunday, but then I was convicted of it as I studied for this message. Recently, I was listening to a message of a man who's preaching on end times. And I think most of you know how I would view end times, at least in the most part. Now, listen to this man preach, and he pretty much explained away, at least what I have always viewed the thousand-year reign meant. And the thousand-year reign of Christ, and it actually don't mean a thousand years. It means thousands of years. And when the Bible talks about the lion and the lamb dwelling together, that's just referring to men who are lions, and when they become Christian, they become lambs, similar to, like, Apostle Paul. He would have been a lion and became a lamb. And maybe this is just Generation X coming out of me, but it's just like, I don't believe that. That is not what I believe. And then the other part of me says, you know what? I'm never going to preach on that subject again. I mean, he refuted everything I always believed. Why would I ever get up and preach on it again? There's always another answer. I don't know that we'll ever know what's actually going to happen. Right? Is that what the wise men did? I don't think they did they? You know, these kind of things sometimes make me indifferent. And you start down this path of thinking, what's the use studying it? It's going to happen the right way regardless of what I think, right? And so why study it? But you know, I don't believe that's the approach the wise men took to it. I believe that they tried to understand. Somehow, they knew. They knew more than the learned people in Jerusalem about what was going on. That star meant something to them. And I've been wrestling through some, just thinking about that whole subject of prophecy and other things. And Cynthia had sent me a link this past week on, what's his name, Brandon Byler. Brandon Byler was preaching, and I listened to the whole message because it kept cutting out on me for some reason. But I was challenged by his message. He preached a message on worldliness. And he's saying how some people say, well, you can't preach on it because that word's not in the Bible. Did you actually know that word's not in the Bible? He said, okay, if we want to get down that path, let's talk about it some more. And I'm just paraphrasing. I'm probably not quoting him verbatim. You know, the word apostasy is not in the Bible. It's not there. You can't find it. Do you know the word responsibility? It's not in the Bible. can't find it. And he simply said, listen, we have got to be, we got to understand that there are a lot of phrases and terms we use today that are referred to in the Bible. It's there. And I just ponder then, how do we know what is right? How can we know that we're following truth? How can I know that my study of the Bible is going to lead me the wrong way? Because I believe these wise men did not have the Bible as we have it. And yet, this Bible is, there is such a mind to explore. Is that the right word? There's tunnels and different places to go. There's so much here. How can I know I'm going to study it right? And I thought of Matthew chapter 5. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And the broken and the contrite. You know, when I study the Bible with a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, an humble heart. You know, I believe these wise men were humble men because they came to see a king doing great miracles, and they were somehow going to get promoted, right? They came to see a baby. There was no glory and honor coming to them. It was all about them giving glory and honor to the baby, to Jesus. And we go down through Matthew chapter 5. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, those who allow God's strength in their life. They shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. And on it goes. And, you know, finally I realize that, you know what? It is worth studying the Bible. It is worth digging in. Dig in with a humble heart. And you know what? God is not going to lead us astray. And so maybe I will again preach on prophecy. I don't know. I'm sure I will someday. But I'm just talking to you about how we can become indifferent, that nothing matters. Because probably for everything you can say, someone can refute it. But you know what? If we search God with a real heart, God will be real with us. Now, number three, and lastly, lessons from Joseph and Mary. And I don't know what feelings course through her, and that's, you know, I don't want to add to something that's not here. But she knew that what happened to her was of God and not out of sin. She knew that, right? Again, I want to say that, okay, I believe that there was some drama, glory, whatever you call it, with that situation, right? We read that when she met Elizabeth. But I really believe she also had a cross to carry as well. There was many false accusations. There were many things that came their way. Because even in John chapter 8, the Jews still commonly believed that Jesus was born of fornication. They said that. It is also most likely that Joseph took the brunt of that. The truth about Joseph's life was probably understood only by a handful of people, I'm going to guess. You know, I'm sure Joseph was relieved to find out that his wife-to-be had been faithful. But you know, Joseph had a cross to carry. And you read Matthew chapter 1, verses 24 and 25. Then Joseph, being raised from the sleep, did as the angel of the Lord had bidden him, and took unto him his wife, and knew her not until she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus. Period. Done. You put yourself in Joseph's shoes, and he died to himself many times. He died to himself many times. Do you know, the story, the Bible draws a curtain over the journey of that young couple. That's about all we know right there, right? You know why? Because the story's not about Mary. The story's not about Joseph. It was about Christ. And maybe I could use another Bible illustration that we use a lot. And maybe Abraham would be a good one. We like the story, at least I do. I like the story of Abraham because I can understand his journey in so many ways, right? We can connect with him, his struggles with faith, and so on it goes. But so many of the things that Abram faced was not about Abraham. It was about God. It was about what God wanted to do. And it was about pointing toward Christ that we were talking about this morning. It's just that, you know, Abraham had the privilege to be a part of a much bigger picture. You know, and in the same way with Joseph and Mary, it was not about, the story we read is, it's not about their journey. We connect because we are human and we connect with it. But it really wasn't about Joseph and Mary. They were just two people who allowed themselves to be used of God, and God used them in this situation. If they wouldn't have did it, someone else would have. They just had the privilege to play a role. And a role that's been read about for generations, right? They had the privilege to play a role in a much bigger picture. Now, it's easy to say because we're looking back, right? We read a little bit we know of them within an hour, right? Don't you think that they also had 24 hours in a day? They also had times where they were not quite sure what's going on. Today, because there are many people sitting here, there are many journeys going on here today. But you know, it's not as much about the journey you are on as it is that we have the privilege to be a part of something that's much bigger than ourselves. And so, lest we get destroyed, discouraged by the journey, let's remember the journey, when it all shakes out, is not about us. It never was about us, and it never will be about us. But it is about God. And God has a plan for each one that we can be a part of that plan. And God wants us to bring the glory back to Christ. And that is where He wants to bring the glory to. And so may God bless you, each one of you, as you face the next week and as you talk with people. Let's remember that. You know this, but let's say it again. It's not about the gifts. It's not about the food. It's not about the gatherings. But it's about Christ. Let us kneel for prayer.